We have Miss Mary Gowan. Gowan. I always have like three tries at every name this round. Mary is a doctoral candidate at the University of Oklahoma. Prior to returning to school to pursue her doctoral studies, she worked in health promotion at the Oklahoma City County Health Department and the University of Oklahoma Health Science Center. So please welcome Mary Gowan.
Hi there. Well, thank you guys so much for having me today. I'm so honored to be here. I don't actually typically work in this area, but I was really excited to be a part of this team, and I'm excited to talk to you guys about some of the results from our project. So I have no relationships to disclose, and I will tell you that this research was funded through a University of Oklahoma faculty development grant awarded to our PI, Dr. Marshall Cheney. So just a little background for you guys. I'm going to use the term asylum seeker a lot. So I wanted to give you a little description of the people that we were exploring with our document review. So the asylum seekers in the study were assigned the sex of male at birth. However, they identified more with the gender norms associated with the female sex, and therefore they expressed their gender in a departure from the gender norms of their culture, and this led them to basically flee their home country of Mexico and seek asylum within the U.S. So I will refer to them as asylum seekers for most of the presentation. And the reason we call them asylum seekers is because they actually fled here first and then sought asylum or refugee status. So the purpose of our project was to actually look at some secondary data. We wanted to qualitatively examine these asylum seeker documents from one single organization that was working with asylum seekers. And through that process, we hope to identify the health service needs of this particular group. So we had a very systematic qualitative process. The representing organization, so the organization that represented our asylum seekers, began by exploring their documents and identifying the sworn declaration, which details the history of the asylum seeker and the psychological evaluations that all asylum seekers have to go through. And once they did that, then they found the English translations for us and sent them over. They used two criteria to identify the documents. One, the asylum seeker must be fleeing from Mexico, and two, they must report that they were transgender or that they dressed in female clothing, took hormones or were planning surgery or things of that nature. Once we received the English translations of the documents, our PI made sure that all the documents were matched and that they were all completely de-identified. Although the representing organization de-identified, we just wanted to make sure that we did everything we could to protect the identities of the asylum seekers. After that, the full team reviewed using the same criteria, so fleeing from Mexico and identifying as transgender. We used the same inclusion criteria, and we actually ended up eliminating one of the asylum seekers. So we ended up with 45 asylum seekers, so we ended up with about 90 paired documents. After we eliminated those and decided that we were ready to go, we uploaded both the sworn declaration and the psychological evaluation into InVivo version 10, which is a qualitative software program. We basically uploaded them as a single document and assigned them a random case number that we used to help identify. So again, we made sure everything was identified only by that. After that, we began looking for codes, which were basically commonalities among our asylum seekers. We did this as a huge team. We were a 10-person multidisciplinary team, so we did this all together. Once we completed our code book, then we basically reviewed about three, I think we ended up doing four because we went back and changed some of the codes. We reviewed three asylum documents together as a team to make sure that we had all of our definitions correct and that we were coding consistent to what we had established during code book development. After that, all of the rest of the documents were coded independently so that we didn't bias each other in any way. Once all of our coding was done, then we began our theme identification. We established a threshold prior to theme, prior to even beginning the the study. And basically what we said was that 25% of asylum seekers had to say something before we would consider it a theme. So around 11 of our asylum seekers had to say it before we would consider it a theme. And the reason that we did that is we wanted to make sure that we were really truly reporting themes that actually were in the documents. It was a lot of information and a lot of really interesting and useful information that we could use, but we wanted to make sure that we were really truly sticking with only what the asylum seekers reported. So if 11 people said it, then we considered it a theme. After we identified our themes, then we went back to our codes and we went back to our original documents and we searched for disconfirming evidence. So basically what we did was we went back and we made sure that anything we were calling a theme was truly, truly a theme, and that there wasn't anything contradictory that we wanted to go ahead and report along with that theme. So that's the boring part. It's over now. So we'll move on to the results. So what I've done here is I've actually put a theme up for you guys, just a little snippet of it, and I'll give you a little background on the theme, and then I've placed some representative quotes into the results. There's three primary categories. So we have experiences while the asylum seekers were living in Mexico, experiences within the U.S., and then certain health consequences that we feel like are important to highlight. So I will start with the experiences in Mexico. So most of our asylum seekers reported verbal or emotional abuse, physical abuse, and unfortunately sometimes sexual abuse by peers, family, and even authority figures. And in terms of authority figures, there were a range. They ranged from police officers and soldiers to teachers and even spiritual and religious leaders within their community. So I'll give you guys a second to read those quotes. Have a little bit more time because I practice for 12 minutes, so give you guys a little extra time. So also in addition to the abuse that they experienced, while in Mexico, many of our asylum seekers reported dropping out of school due to the need to work to meet financial obligations. Many, if not all, of our asylum seekers were at one point kicked out of their home, and therefore were supporting themselves and at different times. And they also reported dropping out of school to escape abuse from peers and from teachers. These experiences resulted in our asylum seekers having little to no education at the time of their immigration to the U.S.
As you let them read, I'm going to cheat and ask a question.
Yeah.
Were these done in Spanish as well?
They were. They were originally in Spanish, and we received the translations from the asylum organization. Yeah. And we actually had two native Spanish speakers on our team, so that was helpful. Okay. Once in the U.S., most asylum seekers still reported experiencing harassment, discrimination, and abuse, but to a lesser degree. In addition, unfortunately, some of them also experienced harassment and discrimination due to their immigrant status once they came to the U.S. Many of our asylum seekers reported high levels of job turnover and high levels of mobility. Some reported that they had difficulty with coworkers due to their transgender status, and others simply tried to move to seek better employment opportunities. Most of our asylum seekers reported low-wage jobs in service industries, such as fast foods, bars, housekeeping, landscaping, those types of jobs. So they had few or no benefits in terms of their work. And some of our participants reported resorting to selling themselves to meet their financial commitments, as you can see from the first quote. So all of these experiences resulted in a number of health consequences. Most of our asylum seekers reported a number of health issues, physical and psychological, and almost all, if not all, of our asylum seekers reported multiple symptoms of PTSD. I think we had two that reported only one PTSD symptom. The psychological consequences that were reported by our asylum seekers were extensive. Most of them reported depression or anxiety, having nightmares and sleep issues, self-imposed seclusion and isolation. A lot of them reported abusing drugs and alcohol, and unfortunately we had lots of reports of suicidal attempts and suicidal thoughts. In addition to the psychological consequences, they reported a range of chronic physical health issues as well. ranging from asthma and type 2 diabetes that were being not being treated to HIV positive status. Most of our asylum seekers, despite experiencing extensive psychological and physical health issues, did not seek services. All of them reported the reason for this was fear and sometimes shame. Many waited months or even years to access any type of service, including the asylum services. And again, they cited fear as the primary reason why they would not do that. So hopefully you guys have had time to at least get one of those quotes on there. If not, come up and talk to me afterwards. But as probably as evidence, or hopefully as evidence by these example themes, there were a lot of issues that could be, or hopefully we could address as health promoters and as public health practitioners. So these experiences of being transgender in the U.S. and in Mexico, and then also once coming to the U.S., also being an illegal immigrant, most likely, made this group particularly vulnerable and in need of services that could help them overcome those barriers to accessing health. And so we'd like to make just a few recommendations for those of you that may be working in an area that may have a high number of these individuals. So recommendation one would be to increase awareness of and access to services such as asylum aid and educational opportunities. Most of our asylum seekers did not meet the asylum deadline, so there's a pretty strict process to seek asylum in the U.S. once you've already come here, and almost all of them did not meet that deadline because they didn't know that they could seek asylum. And all of them expressed a strong desire to become contributing members of the U.S. society. So they would likely take advantage of any type of educational opportunities or job training that would be available to them. In addition, we would like to suggest that if possible, increasing access to ongoing free and low-cost mental health and physical health services that provide judgment-free care would be very beneficial to this group. The most cited reason for not seeking care was fear. And unfortunately, the side effect of that was buying hormones illegally or having procedures done in unlicensed clinics, which contributed to health issues that they were experiencing. In addition to that, many of them had chronic health conditions that they were not treating, such as type 2 diabetes or even HIV positive status, and so therefore their health was declining very rapidly at the time of asylum. And then finally, if we could increase access to culturally relevant community health workers, that would be incredibly beneficial to this group. Again, fear and lack of trust were expressed over and over again by this group, and most of them found out about services within their community from other illegal immigrants. So not from any of our, you know, primary sources or the ways that we talk to people. So if we could hopefully, you know, ideally recruit previous asylum seekers that have gained refugee status within the U.S. to help us identify other people that would be seeking asylum, that would be incredibly beneficial to this group. As with any study, there are limitations to this study. This is secondary data. The data was collected to help people seek asylum, not for health purposes. So obviously, we would have loved to have been able to talk to this group ourselves and ask them very specific questions and follow-ups about their health. But we didn't get to do that. And then in addition, we have to keep in mind that those who sought asylum may be different from the individuals that don't seek asylum. So they may be particularly resilient and may just definitely be different. So we have to keep that in mind when we're thinking about the recommendations. So thank you guys very much. I really appreciate your time.